I would like first thank the organizer of the workshops, Boy Streaming, for inviting me to the conference. Today I'm going to talk about some of our recent velocity measurement in turbulent convection. And this, the main work is done by my postdoc, Xinliang Chu, and some of the early work is done by a graduate student, Sun Hong Yao. One thing I learned over the years is that the turbulent thermal convection it's really an ideal system to study the physics of turbulence. First, it's a low Reynolds number flow, and you can easily set up a small system in a lab. For example, if we just use a cylindrical cell, aspect ratio 1, the height 20 centimeter, filled with water, you can get the really number something like 10 to 10. The characteristic velocity 2 centimeters per second. The corresponding viscous boundary layer thickness about 3 millimeter. And the thermal boundary layer for water is below 1 millimeter. So you can calculate the Reynolds number based on the height of the cell, which is about 4,000. And if you calculate the Reynolds number based on the boundary layer thickness, which is small, it's about 60. Well, despite this special way of generating turbulence, turbulent convection shares many common features of high Reynolds number. Turbulent flows, we've been talking a lot about the scaling in heat transport, in temperature and velocity statistics. And there's another feature here is you put a local temperature probe or a velocity probe, you will find a very intermittent fluctuations. Here is an example at the cell, in the cell aspect ratio half. At the cell center, this is the Rayleigh number, and then we measure three components of velocities. You can see it's very turbulent fluctuation there. The other thing, which another feature I'm going to focus on today, is the coherent structures in the flow system. There are two main coherent structures coexist in this convection cell. One is the large scale circulation we have discussed. Here is a visualization. I shine the vertical laser sheet through the center of the convection cell. And in water, put a small, about 50 micron diameter, liquid crystal particles. These particles change color. The green blue regions are colder, and the brown regions is warmer. So you can see beside these are some plumes. There's a large scale circulation here, and this the center of that circulation, which about the center of the convection cell. This is about the view is about upper 2/3 of the convection cell. This is a white sheet. It's not laser, we have to see the color. The other coherent structure is the thermal plumes. We can also use the technique to see that. Here is the upper surface. You get a thin layer of thermal boundary layer, and these layers marginally stable. They just intermittently inject thermal plumes. Here is a particular one. You can see a jet of fluid get inject here, and then they generate a pair of vertices, and you see this mushroom-shaped thing, the large scales from right to the left, so that the plume get tilt along the large scale direction. So today, I'm just trying, there has been many experimental theoretical studies in this problem, but we still have many open questions. For example, one thing is, what's the relation between the structure and the scaling? That's a key issue in the general study of turbulence. So for this talk, let me stay away about the scaling and focus on the structure part and to see what we can learn there. So over the last several years, my group, together with Dr. Keqing Xia's group at Chinese U Hong Kong, we're trying to develop different laser light scaling techniques to measure the velocity and the velocity difference in the flow system. So we measure the velocity difference and local velocity fluctuations at the cell center. We also measure the velocity profile near the wall, and we also study turbulent convection over in the cell with rough upper and lower rough surfaces. But these velocity measurements more or less is a local measurement. And if you get a nice homogeneous system, it's okay. It doesn't matter where you put a local probe. But I will show you that there's a large scale structure which is not homogeneous, isotropic. So we have to know the global structure. And that's what I'm going to talk about. The technique we're going to use is standard laser Doppler velocimetry. This is the convection cell filled with water. The aspect ratio, the diameter is 20 centimeters. We just vary the height, so we can get three aspect ratios, half, one, and the two. The bulk fluid temperature during the experiment is fixed constant, about 30 degrees C, so the Prandtl number is fixed. And we change the temperature different, and therefore we vary the Rayleigh number. Compare all the previous talks, the convection cell, low temperature helium, mercury, compressed gas. This is a very simple cell. The gain we have is, one is we can do visualization, and the most important thing is that we can do a precise velocity measurement, free of assumptions. This is absolute measurement. We can get accuracy down to 1%. The main thing is we have to get statistical fluctuations average. So with water, we can put small 5 micron polymer latex spheres, very dilute. The density of polymer latex sphere is 1.05. It's closely matched with water. And this is solid spheres. We don't have to, unlike these critical fluctuations, there's no internal motion. So this, all the thing we measure is the laser Doppler frequency. That's the velocity information. And in the laser Doppler, what you do typically, you focus two beams at a particular point in the fluid, and you form a interference fringes. When the particle cross this crossover region, the scatter lag is modulated by these things. You know the spacing. All you have to measure is the time from which you get a local velocity. And one of the beam is a frequency shifted by about 40 megahertz, so that the pattern of these things will move. In that case, even if you get a particle with zero velocity, you can still measure the relative displacement. And these were so that there's no lower cutoff for the velocity measurement. You can measure velocity both direction from zero to whatever the largest velocity. I like this fixed two-probe techniques many people use. You have to measure, for example, the thermal plume, the crossover, the time of flight, in which you have to be sure this velocity has been much bigger than the other velocity. Otherwise, you just miss that thing. And because that, you get a cutoff. You cannot measure the lower velocity. So your sampling is biased. But here is, you can get the accurate measurement. But that's the gain. The price we pay for this system is the Rayleigh number range is relatively narrow. And the other thing, well, with water, Gunter pointed out that you sometimes you get a large non-bosonic effect here. And there's another thing about the laser Doppler is that we get a boundary layer, thermal boundary layer about 1 millimeter on the bottom, on the top, you know, where you get a strong temperature fluctuations, which give you strong fluctuations of reflective index, and therefore the laser beams start to dance a little bit. That will ruin your signal to noise ratio. So we cannot get the velocity very close to the thermal boundary layer. But beside that, in the bulk region, it works great. Well, before I discuss the detail about, we want to do some velocity structure, but velocity is a three-dimensional vector and also a three-dimensional space. It's a lot of work we have to do. Let me just try to tell you what we learned here. Fortunately, the structure is relatively simple. What we found that in the three cells, essentially, there's a large-scale circulation here. And this circulation is two-dimensional. So that's first, we don't have to worry about the other dimension. And within the cell, you can see that we don't have to measure every point. What we did is we do a cut. We measure the velocity at the center, of the boundary plate, and then move these things up. So we do this cut. We also do a cut at the middle plane as a function of distance away from the sidewall. So that's the two cuts we do. And also, maybe people already mentioned that this quasi-two-dimensional flow, because of the cylindrical symmetry, they will rotate along the vertical axis. So to lock that thing, we tilt the cell a little bit. You just put a few sheets of paper. You don't need a cut, tilt a little bit less than 1 degree. That's, you break the symmetry, so the plane get locked in one particular plane so that we can do a scan of the velocity measurement. Here is the measurement in aspect ratio. One, so you can just think this our cell, the square box, okay? What I'm measuring here is the velocity as a function of distance away from the center of the bottom plate. This is a function I call the Z. We measure two components. One is the horizontal velocity horizontal profile parallel to the conducting plate. One is the vertical component in this direction. These two directions in the plane. This is the circulation plane. Okay, we fix that thing. Yeah. Well, first. So that's the reason we get to 4 millimeters per second. I didn't get zero. Well, you can see that in the experiment. Your signal, the sampling rate, just if you move too close, your sampling rate just getting lower and lower, and eventually you say, I'm not going to charge the data. You stop there. Okay? Yes? But let me finish saying, and then you can ask. So what we see is that near the boundary, the velocity linearly increases with, I can blow up this region, but it's a linear increase as a function of distance away from the surface, reach the maximum and decay a little bit, and most of the part here is linear. And in the center, the velocity goes to zero. But if this is an exact circular, the horizontal velocity is big, the vertical should be zero. What we found is that it's an ellipse. And this thing tilts a little bit along the diagonal of that cell, and therefore you get a small component of the vertical velocity. and that's the right one. And this is one cut. We can get another cut here. I measure the velocity from here all the way to here. This is the distance I call the x. And this the right one, is the velocity component perpendicular to the rotation plane. And indeed, you can see it's zero. And this profile along the side, in the direction, vertical direction, it's more or less the same characteristic as near the conducting plate. Okay, I have to mention that. This is a long time average. Each point, we wait at least 2 hours. If we want to do a nice statistics about power spectrum and the PDF, we average over 8 hours. It's a whole day, measurement 1 point. You do it. But to get a nice profile, we have to, that's 2 hours each point, so you have to do it.
How are you processing the
tracker? Well, it's 2 hours, just manually do it.
How are you processing the
tracker? Oh, this is a laser Doppler, what's it called, conditioner correlator. The newest correlator. Well, let me rotate these things to compare. So I just want to compare the velocity profile near the conducting plate and near the sidewall.
Yeah, just
it's the time. We know it's the symmetry, so we didn't go. It's the time. So what you see is that in the linear region, the two things overlap, so suggesting that in the center, it's a rigid body rotation. This velocity is the same. But near the sidewall, the vertical is bigger than the horizontal. So that's, you see, there's some driving force on this way. I will give you more evidence to show that, but I just let's comment that there's a band region you go do this way. This is the mean, so we can also put the RMS there. So this is the RMS velocity for the same as a function of distance away. These are two corresponding components for these two. We can also get a third component. One, you can find that to the zeroth order, the RMS is isotropic, namely for the three components, they are more or less the same, and also homogeneous, meaning that it's flat almost. So we can find three regions from this. One is, so we can define this region. One region is in the center part, where the RMS is larger than the RMS, than the mean, where this thing is sort of rigid body rotating. And there's near the sidewall or near the conducting plate, you get a boundary layer. And there's in between, there's a mixing zone where the velocity, mean velocity, is bigger than the RMS. And also, I will show you later here, this region, both on both sides and also on the top and the bottom, it's an active region where it's plume dominant. And in the center, it's a fully mixed state. This is the situation for aspect ratio 1. We also did for aspect ratio 2. So you can think this is the box of convection cell. Here is the first measurement from bottom plate to at the function of z. So again, we see a horizontal velocity profile. We get a vertical velocity profile. In this case, the circulation is this way. It's pure horizontal. The vertical is zero, you can see. and the profile is more or less same thing. In the middle, vertical middle half, it's a linear, and near in this mixing zone, you get sort of jet going this way. And this is the sidewall measurement, and this thing coming out. So you can see, you get a linear in this middle. This is two. This is so in the middle, you get a linear. Basically, you get a quarter here, get two quarter here. Essentially, it's mixing zone. If we want to compare the RMS in this case, another thing we found near the conducting wall, the maximum velocity is a little bit bigger than the vertical, because here we get a little bit smaller region, here it's twice as big, so if by conservation you lost some velocity. You can also, so this is the dominant velocity is in the horizontal direction. I can pull the RMS there. Again, in this linear region, dominant is RMS, not the mean. And near the sidewall, the mean is bigger than, near the conducting wall, the mean is bigger than the RMS. The same thing near the sidewall. Another thing, there's a possibility whether we get two rows or not. If you get a two row, it has to be this way or the other way. In any case, in the center, the velocity cannot be zero. But here, clearly, we see its velocity goes through here, it's zero. So we confirm that more or less it's one row. It's not circular, it's squeezed a little bit, and the aspect ratio of this is about 1 to 2. Well, I will show you that.
I don't see the difference between having zero velocity in the center from having a single wall to having two walls. You have a velocity profile that's almost identical to what I get for small aspect ratio near a triangle single wall in my calculation. It's going to be zero in the center because...
No, if it's a two-row, it has to go this way. It cannot move against each other. I don't see that's the possibility.
The measurement of velocity at a particular slice, or is this an average
over time? It's the average over time. Each point, you just wait 2 hours, move point by point from all the way to the up. So this is the aspect ratio. Two, now let me move to the taller sail. Aspect ratio half. Measure the vertical, we move the probe as a function of Z. And what we found in the taller sail, the dominant flow, basically this half moving up, the other half moving down. There's a tiny bit horizontal velocity there. And indeed, you can see the circles are horizontal in this, and this, the squares is vertical in this. And again, the circulation is ellipse, it's tilted a little bit along the diagonal, so you get a little bit vertical velocity there. And the point I want to make, we don't have two rows stacked on top of each other. If that's the case, your horizontal velocity here should be this way, and here you get the other way, and then you get the other way. We didn't get that thing. So again, everything symmetric about this, you get a tiny bit horizontal, but nevertheless, on this side, it's positive on this. On the other side, it's negative to the other direction. And here, it's the velocity profile near the sidewall. And clearly, you can see there's a large flow in this direction. And this is also almost linear. again, the vertical component, the velocity component perpendicular to this rotation plane is zero. One thing I want to show you is that if I put RMS there, you will see there's a difference here, namely the RMS anywhere, first it's not homogeneous anymore. You get a profile and it's not isotropic. It depends on which component. But the important thing is everywhere here, the RMS is always bigger than the mean, even near the sidewall, which is different from aspect ratio 1 cell and aspect ratio 2 cells. Okay, so this is the profile average over a long time. Now, let me answer the question about maybe these things just periodic change sometimes, plus sometimes, minus, you may get an RV zero. And here, in the aspect ratio 2 cell, at the cell center, at this particular Rayleigh number, these are three components of velocities. Clearly, what you can see is that there's oscillation. It's the mean, but these things, the whole system is oscillating. We saw this oscillation for every direction and everywhere. You just put any probe, not at the center, anywhere you put, you see this obvious oscillation. I don't know. But I can show you some Rayleigh number dependent, see. And you can see it, but of course you can do a Fourier transform. Obviously, you see a big peak for three components. So you just confirm that. This for shorter cell, where you get a better communication between the bottom and the top plate. If I move to the aspect ratio 1, again, this aspect ratio at the cell center, three different directions, you'll find for this component X and Y. X is horizontal direction, Y is the direction perpendicular to the rotation plane. You can just by eye you can see some period there. But for the vertical direction in the rotation plane, it's very hard to see. And if you do a Fourier transform, again, you see peak, a dominant peak in Y, you see somewhat peak in X, but it's hardly to see anything in Y. Again, this is a log, so it's the peak, if you plot a linear, it's huge. So now I'm changing the distance more and more, I'm changing the height. And therefore, for taller cell, it's just hardly you can see any oscillation for three directions by eye. There's a little bit, I think, well, let me show you PDF, the power spectrum. What we found is there's a Y component perpendicular to the rotation plane. There's a little bit here. But other than that, okay, let me... So let me quickly summarize, give me 2 minutes. So what we saw for this cell, the vertical velocity in this one is dominant. For aspect ratio 1, this velocity is a little bit larger than this one. And for this, the dominant velocity, this one, we saw the oscillation in the large scale. So what we want to, what's the model? So essentially, what we saw is that by visualization, the large scale flow shared the warm plume on one side and shared the cold plume on the other side. Now, then you get this shearing. So you get a buoyancy force. In this direction, you get a buoyancy force. And these things tend to shear. And people already saw in the temperature power spectrum near the bottom, you get a frequency.
What we found here is that here is the,
let me just plot. This is the oscillation frequency we found in the aspect ratio 1 cell. So these go as roughly 0.43. And we also measure what's the rotation frequency. And that rotation frequency, this solid line, is more or less parallel, but it's factor of 1.8 smaller in terms of absolute frequency. I also plot some temperature oscillation frequency near the bottom, near the thermal boundary. And this is the result in helium, which goes this way. I also get the formula from Siliberto's papers, water. It got more or less there. So what the whole picture is the following. Because of the coupling between the bottom and top, you get a plume reach to the top, excited emission of the cold plume downward go this way. And because of the spatial separation between the warm and the cold, it gives you the torque. And this torque is impulsive. And I think that the fluid is essentially the oscillation is the response of that impulsive torque. So we think that it's a self-feeding mechanism which can keep the things going. To further support this, I measure the temperature profile in the middle plane from this side wall to the other side wall. And indeed, near the right side where you get, I say there's a warm plume, the fluctuation is one way. In the middle, it's symmetric. In the other direction, you see fluctuation the other way. And if you want to do some mean velocity, mean temperature, you found there's a slightly temperature change in the horizontal plane, where on this side is warm plume, the temperature a little bit higher than the other side. It's plus minus 0.2 degrees C over a temperature difference about 18 degrees. This is 1%, but that's nevertheless there. And if you plot the RMS, fluctuation temperature, this is in the middle region where you get a linear velocity profile. And here, clearly we see two plume dominant regions on this way, on that way, and also here and here. So with that things, I think with the structure, we can, I'm done. We think we can say something about the transport mechanism we discussed in this paper. Namely, there are two parallel channels. One is essentially carried by this large scale flow over this mixing zone. That's sort of the velocity profile, sort of like jet near the wall. It's the boundary layer played a role because it will drag the jet. On the other hand, it's the buoyancy which drives the thing. And in the middle, we see a nice mixing. So it seemed to me that the mechanism, whatever you get in scaling, is there are two parallel channels one need to consider. Okay, thank you. See, you get the plumes which carry the heat, and this thing gets shear to the side wall, and the cold plume going this way. If you use the electronic language, basically you get electron go this way, you get holes go the other way, and that's driven by a drift current. So that's one channel. There's another channel is the plume goes through in the middle, cold plume, and warm plume, the electron ionically holes that you can get a transport through turbulent mixing. And in that region, the RMS velocity dominate. It's not the mean. So that's what I'm saying, there are two parallel channels. What's the really number dependent? That's a different thing, but I just want to show you that's the mechanism. So in that, this plume dominant region, you have to worry about shear boundary layer. You also have to worry about the driving of the buoyancy. What we can talk a little bit more, but one thing, there's a delicate balance. These two channels balance each other. So it depends on which experiment you're talking about. In one experiment, you're surprised that the flow go this way, the flow may go the other way. So I don't know whether you really surprised the flow or not. That's one thing. The other thing is, these are self-feeding things. I mean, that's the coupling. You surprise one, maybe the other channel getting more. Thank you.